It's Monday, June 12th, 2006, and you're listening to Episode 5 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 49 and a half minutes. That's right. You're listening to Fear the Boot. That's an audio clip that was sent in to us by Jim in Buffalo. So,
hi, Jim.
Jim, there's your audio clip. Call off the attack dogs. You don't need to hurt any of us. We used it. And if you guys if you guys have any feedback for us or little goodies like that, you can send them to us at feartheboot.com. And also, we have an account on Odeo. It's just like rodeo without the R, Odeo.com. And if you go there, you can send us voicemail. Record it like with your own computer's mics and MP3 and put
it's
it
very
in
a pink site.
It is a very pink site. It has a little bird on it. Looks kind of like the Red Robin.
Yeah. I didn't know what they had that bird up.
That
under
a bird?
Our,
I thought it was a chicken.
Yeah.
Well, a chicken's a bird, you know.
It was under our profile, and I emailed Dan. I'm like, Dan, why with Fear the Boot do we have a rooster, perhaps a quail, maybe a chicken as our icon? I don't get it.
Yeah, that was my fault. I had created an account there, but I had never actually gone back and finished our profile, but it's done now, so you can visit us on Odeo. It's our user ID there is Fear the Boot, all one word, no spaces. So if you send us a voicemail, we'll be sure to check that out. Now, before we dig into any other topic today, we're going to nip something in the bud.
Controversy.
Yes, we've in episode 2 we did a review of Shadowrun, and two of my hosts, Chad and John,
and guess who's not here today,
were rather antagonistic about Shadowrun, and I did not contradict them, which was a mistake. So we're going to straighten out exactly what the views of the hosts are on Shadowrun.
This has caused a lot of controversy. I mean, we've gotten emails about it. We've gotten postings on our site. And I've had people in our WoW guild heckle me about not liking Shadowrun.
Yeah, so we're going to have to straighten this out. So first of all, let me clarify that I really enjoy Shadowrun. That's one of the reasons I picked it for our mock game. Mm-hmm. I own multiple books. I would not say it's my number one game, but I do really like Shadowrun. Kevin and Tim are not here today, but they also really enjoy Shadowrun. I think Kevin owns significantly more books than I do. So let me first of all say that the view that Chad and John have of Shadowrun is not universally
held.
It is
the minority opinion.
Yes, it is the minority opinion here.
I still haven't played Shadowrun.
And that's a good reason for that, too.
Because I still haven't played it.
Yeah. Right. Well, your main game master doesn't like it, so
Chad won't run it for them, which is why they've never played it. That may change. When I run a game for you guys in the future, I may run Shadowrun. I think it has a very colorful setting. It comes from a lot of tried and true cyberpunk conventions, Walter John Williams, things like that. But it's got a good solid setting. I like the rule system, very gritty rule system, sudden death. I like the organic magic. By organic magic, I mean magic that's based on you, your stats, your life force. Not like D&D where you have...
But the spell does this much damage for everybody.
Yeah. Exactly. So, Chad, just to let you say your piece for the folks at home, what exactly is it you don't like about Shadowrun?
Well, I want to clear a couple things up, too. It's not that I don't... Hey, Shadowrun, and every time I see the book, I like rip it in half or anything like that. Not that I could, because the books are like 300 or 400 pages long.
If you could rip a Shadowrun book in half, you're on your way to being a circus act.
Yes.
I'd pay to see that.
One of my problems with it is the heavy rules, and really that was a problem with first edition, because that was my introduction into Shadowrun. So I guess it put a bad taste in my mouth. The rules were almost random. They were all over the place. There was no order. I think we talked about it on one of the shows. Yeah. We were flipping back and forth to make characters. And they fixed that. You know, the other editions came out, and the editions got better and better as far as the rules go. So that's not really the issue. My problem with Shadowrun is that I'm a huge cyberpunk fan. I read a lot of William Gibson. I've read all the cyberpunk books. And I like the genre a lot. And I think that it kind of deludes it to put magic into it and dragons and stuff. And I am not what you'd call a fan of high fantasy. I like fantasy and stuff. But I don't like, you know, dragons flying through the air and common magic. And even the lowliest street urchin can cast basic spells and all that. I'm not a fan of that. And I don't care for how it mixes the sci-fi, the real, because to me, cyberpunk is real gritty, dark, dirty sci-fi, mixes with this really high fantasy element.
And see, I like that.
Yeah, a lot of people do like that.
I have always liked the sort of anachronistic games mm-hmm. that mix genres. Similarly, if we were playing a medieval game, mm-hmm. I like the flintlocks to be mixed in with the magic. I like.
And you know, that's really weird. So do I.
I don't think I go.
But I don't like Shadowrun. I don't like it the other way.
Right.
I like my fantasy to have a little sci-fi in it.
Right.
But I don't like my sci-fi to have any fantasy in
See,
it.
See, I enjoy mixing them both.
You purist.
I don't know. It's weird.
I enjoy the mix. I like fantasy with sci-fi. I like sci-fi with fantasy.
Well, let me ask you this, Dan. How do you feel about your Western being mixed with sci-fi? I see eyes rolling, sighing.
All right. If you want to send us hate mail for what is about to follow, that would be feartheboot.com.
Yeah, he's Dan,
yes,
by the way.
Dan at feartheboot.com, right? Just title your email, "This is why I'm mad at you." I'm not a big fan of mixing sci-fi and Western. Mm. I don't mind so much mixing fantasy and Western, but with sci-fi and Western... I think there's a forced attempt, because I mean a Western is really an industrial
right.
scientific
it's already
age.
Has if you're running it properly, it already has.
And
the,
so what you do is you take a super advanced society, and you try to make all their ridiculously high tech stuff look crappy.
It's like you are going to get so many fan hate mails from people who love Firefly.
Hey. I loved Firefly.
Right. Well, we're not going to dig into Firefly.
Oh boy!
But
I think we'll have this argument on the way home tonight.
But you know, you have a robot, and it's a nice robot, and it does all these super advanced things and great AI. Except it's got cogs sticking out, and it blows out steam and smoke all the time, and yet it has laser guns and particle cannons.
The cogs and the steam are really cool.
Right.
The laser guns mounted on it, not so much.
Now, I don't mind putting sci-fi into the Western. Like, for example, if you take, what was that Will
West
Smith?
World? Oh, wait.
Wild Wild West.
Wild Wild West,
something like that, where you have...
Like that big spider?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't mind stuff like that. Taking a Western and drawing
this... Well, that's a genre called steampunk.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with steampunk.
Yeah, steampunk...
Well, that was like a steampunk Western.
But when
that's what steampunk is. It usually is Western.
But when you have like a... particle gun six shooter, that's kind of mm-hmm. where I think you're trying to...
Well, it's the level, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like in WoW, or World of Warcraft, they do that, where they have the flintlocks and stuff, and it's a fantasy game, and it's cool. But then they start getting into where they have tanks, and a lot of people like this, and it's just like kind of pushing that edge.
Right.
Where,
it's purely a personal taste thing. It's personal flavor, personal taste. Not my thing. You know, I'm sure there's folks listening to it that mm-hmm. They love all that stuff, and that's great.
What was that role-playing game called that was...
the one you played with the deck of cards?
Yeah.
I know Tim knew it, and I can't remember what the name
they
of
had
it
a
is.
Hole drilled right through the book.
Yeah, like it had been shot.
Like it had been shot, yeah.
I know.
Westworld or...
I don't
know. No, that's a movie. I don't know.
Tim knew it. He actually picked up the books. I don't remember.
Yeah, we tried to get a game going with it. It just didn't work out.
Speaking of games, one of the other games we made a passing comment about I want to clarify our stance on is Champions. Now, before we comment on Champions...
Don't kill us, Jim.
Yeah. We got a lot of emails about Shadowrun. We got just email from one person about Champions, but he felt very strongly.
Oh, yes.
So, let me clarify our stance on Champions. Now, first, let me give a disclaimer. I've only played one Champions game with one game master.
All right, let me put in my disclaimer. I've still never played Champions.
And there's a reason for that.
I was with him with the one game, right. So you've never played it.
So I realize one is not a significant survey sample.
Right. Well, have read the books. We've read them. So it's not like we're just had a crappy game experience and then walked away angry.
Well, you know, I'm not saying that's what it is, but I would leave that possibility open because you got to admit...
Yeah.
I don't want to bash the guy, but the guy that ran that one game for us, you know, he's a little out there.
Yeah.
So whatever was, you know, good or bad about the rules was going to be widely distorted by this guy. And what our opinion was this. Champions, I thought, had a lot of neat ideas. I am not the sort of person that's generally intimidated by detailed, complicated rules.
These are very, very detailed, complicated rules.
What kind of concerned us was the way the game was being run for us. Mm-hmm. The rules, they weren't just complicated. They weren't just overbearing. They were like a ball and chain.
Yeah. You couldn't take a step without rolling on a chart.
Right. And I remember, for example, the character...
Well, what if you fell down?
Exactly. Well,
there's
how
always
did you
a possibility
fall down?
That you could fall down.
Like, for example, I remember Chad was playing a character who had some kind of a rage-based power. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to get angry, not even to like enact his power, but just his character was getting angry.
Yeah, it was like a role-playing thing. Somebody said something, and my character was pissed off, not to enact the powers. I had to roll on it.
Yeah, and he was required to roll to get angry.
Well, did you get angry?
No, I think I blew the roll.
Yeah.
This guy was insulting my mother and spitting in my face, and I was like,
kneeing
cool
you in the groin.
And this
was awesome.
Turn the other cheek, man. That's who I was.
You were the Christian rage monster.
What's funny is the character's name was Christian.
Yeah.
So he actually was the Christian rage monster. But... You know, and this was not a rule I think the guy made up. I mean, he had a page in the book. And so, you know, I'm willing to leave that our one experience with Champions was just a bad experience.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, just because the rules are there just means that the DM has to, every time you take a step, roll the dice.
Well, and, you know, that's something that we got into because we were on the way up to the studio here. We were talking about how, you know, what is a bad game? What is a good game? Well, technically, there's really no such thing as a good game or a bad game.
Yeah, it's really hard for them to put out a bad game.
If you have a good GM, and you have a good group...
And you like the system.
And you like, and you're comfortable with the game setting, and the system's okay, then you're going to have a good game,
yeah. And for example, even just in the email we get, we've had people write in and say that they love games like Champions, they love the detailed mm-hmm. rules. We've had people write in and say, you know what, a guy, I believe named Steven, and I don't have my email in front of me, wrote in talking about how, you know, he wants to get the rules out of the way.
Yeah.
Simple rules. And even
that's me.
I know. Actually, playing now in a role-playing game with both you and Chad, Dan, you are very on the more rules end. And Chad,
wait till he starts running the game.
I know it's
going to
be
a totally new experience for you.
Yeah. And Chad is totally on the other opposite of that.
I am anti-rule.
So even around this table, you've got wide opinions, mm-hmm. and that's something we respect about the role-playing community as a whole.
Yeah. Except for those GURPS people.
Right. Chad at fearthegurps.com. But with Champions, I will say some positive things about it. As someone who likes the detailed rules, the presence of rules didn't bother me. I liked a lot of the concepts they had in the rules. For example, the origin of your power, the easier it was to take away from you, got you different mm-hmm. perks and flaws and things. So there was some neat stuff in Champions, and I am willing to leave the door open that we had a bad experience, and maybe the game is a whole lot better than we played it. But from what I've seen of it, great game, well developed, just not our thing. And maybe I'm wrong. But
too many rules, too many charts, not enough setting. I think was it supposed to be a generic superheroes game setting?
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's like the D&D of superheroes.
Right.
You can't even keep track of a character sheet.
Character sheets just weigh you down.
More than three pages of charts, and I don't know what you're doing with yourself.
The entire back cover was your main reference chart that you had to roll off of all the other charts.
They just need a whiteboard-sized poster.
Yeah. The big board.
Okay, moving away from our incendiary opinions real quick. There's a network out there where when I first put this podcast out there, I got us signed up with a whole bunch of different sites, listing directories and such. In fact, people have actually been looking for us on some of those sites, so I'm glad I put us there. Mm. One of the sites I'm trying to get us onto is the Goblin Network, which is a network of RPG-related podcasts. So if anyone's looking for us there, I'm working on that. The guy that runs it, Paul, just hasn't emailed me back yet. So if anyone is in on the Goblin Network or knows Paul, if you guys could kind of nudge him to say, hey, you know, take a look at these guys, get them added to your list of podcasts.
Because Goblin Networks, I mean, we're all fairly new to this podcast thing. It seems like it's pretty popular. All the other role-playing podcasts that I was looking at, most all of them have a link on the podcast network. So.
Yeah, and I believe they're sort of aggregate broadcast on iTunes is fairly mm-hmm. well rated.
Yeah.
So something we'd like to get into, we're certainly on the right subject for it. We just need to take the steps to get us on there. Now, for the advice portion of the show today, we're going to talk about NPC, or non-player character creation, just following right through all of our steps to build the SMOT campaign. But before we dig into that, we want to talk about a couple other things first. One of them is we got an email talking about the good games that have kind of come and gone. The really great games that just aren't around anymore, aren't that popular anymore. And on the show, our hosts kind of run the age range. I guess we got John, who's 20, and then you, Adam, who's 23. But then Chad, Tim, Kevin, and I, we're all around 30 years old. So we've played a lot of the older games back through the 80s and such. I actually have a original first edition D&D game sitting in the storage room to my right. So we definitely know there was a lot of really good stuff out that just sort of came and went. And if you are a newer gamer, and I know right now newer gamers are, of course, caught up in the products they're familiar with, a lot of D20 system, for example. But if you're a newer gamer who has never played any of these old systems, next time you're in your hobby shop, go to the clearance bin, pick a couple of them up for a couple, you know, $5 or whatever they go for, and take a look at them. Because these games had a lot of good ideas. Their systems were very innovative, very neat. And even if you don't like them as a whole, you can still cherry pick out of these books.
Artwork was very bad.
it was hit or miss by product. Yeah. But you could still cherry pick out of these books a lot of great equipment lists, plot ideas, rules ideas that you can adapt into your own game. And if you're an older gamer like us who remembers all these titles, next time you're in the hobby shop, don't forget to pick them up. Recently, Chad went on a big buying spree for classic BattleTech material.
Yeah.
Well, we attempted to.
Well,
you've got a
lot. The city was pretty bare.
The city was bare. In fact, you will not find any pre-FASA folding BattleTech stuff in any of the local hobby shops in St. Louis because we bought them all. We actually were sitting around and we're like, oh my God, we need BattleTech. We don't have any
BattleTech
books.
We need now.
And so we opened up a phone book and we went to the hobby section, the gaming shops, even like train shops, model railroad model shop stuff. Back in the day, they used to sell role-playing games as a sideline. Well, a lot of those shops still have the stock. I mean, they just don't get rid of it. And so what we did is we went through a phone book and we called every single one and said, do you have any BattleTech stuff on your shelf? And this was before, like, WizKids and FanPro and stuff.
And even if you don't want to go through something that organized.
For BattleTech, it's worth it.
Oh, for BattleTech, it's worth it.
Yeah, if you've got a game you love that ain't around anymore, you'll do it. But even if you're someone who isn't familiar with the old games and you don't want to do anything that organized, I said, next time you're in a gaming shop, if you see an old Torg or Traveler, Renegade Legion, classic BattleTech book sitting there, grab it, take it home, check it out. You might be surprised by how good the games were back then.
If it's classic BattleTech, buy it and then send it in.
Send it in. We'll review it and you'll never see it again.
Yes.
And I hate to sound like a curmudgeon-y old man, but there's a part of me that thinks really the games back then were in some ways better than most of the games that are out now.
Yes and no. I think that there's this whole trend going towards D20.
Oh, we need to steer clear of that topic. That's going to be an entire podcast.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people on either side of the fence like that. But I think that there's also, nowadays, a lot of really innovative games. I mean, I remember when Vampire the Masquerade came out. Not necessarily one of my favorite games, but it was really different when it came out. It really focused a lot on role-playing and story and stuff.
Right.
And then there's also games like Nobilis, which is really... I mean, this book is so beautiful, you could put it on your coffee table. And it was tons and tons of story and stuff.
Is that angel and demon-looking one that you have?
Yeah, but the angel and demon one is called Innomine. Oh. And Nobilis is kind of different. It is the one that Dawn got. I think it's a role-playing game for girls.
A role-playing game for girls.
Well, I mean, it's so pretty, and it's so...
One of the things I got an email about...
Not to offend any of the female fans.
One of the things I got an email about, I think from a guy named Steven, was about girlfriend games. Games you can use to hook your girlfriend into role-playing. And he mentioned a game I've actually... I don't know that I've ever heard of before called Everway. And he said that it had all these really... A fairly simplistic rule system, all these really beautiful fantasy art cards, and this is what suckers... Now, with our group, I don't know what it was for Dawn, but with like my wife and Tim's wife, our girlfriend game, strangely enough, was the fastest Star Trek game because... Mm-hmm.
Well, the girls were fans of Star Trek to begin with. Well, helped.
Or even if they weren't fans, they knew a lot about it because...
Yeah, well, it's Star Trek. Everybody knows a lot
about it. We throw out Battletech and they just get so intimidated by the amount of stuff written on it. They know nothing about it. They don't want to play because they feel like... They'll feel stupid. They're on the outside. But everybody knows Klingons and Vulcans.
Right. Yeah.
So that roped them right
anybody
in.
Worth anything, anyway. Yeah.
Well, anyone listening to this podcast knows Klingons and Vulcans. So what was it? What was the girlfriend game for Dawn and...
For our the other group away from you guys, it there wasn't a girlfriend game. It was... we had more girls
than
guys.
Oh, yeah, when we first started, it was more girls than guys. Yeah,
yeah.
Weird.
And the girls, like, came to us, and they had role-played once or twice and stuff, and my wife had played with our old group and whatnot, and she was a hardcore role-player. And the girls, we all met at work, and they came up to us and were like, hey, you've role-played before, and we've role-played one or two games, and we don't have a group. Let's role-play. And we're like,
wow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yes, ma'am. Sorry. Yes. Yeah. And they're like, "Yeah, we want to play D&D. We want to play it now." And I'm like, "Oh, okay. Okay, I'll run that for you. Just don't hurt me. Put the frying pan down.
Gaming.
Put down the croissant.
Put down the croissant."
A gaming group with a token dude.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was me and Adam and Phil, and then it was four.
Yeah, it was four girls.
Four girls, and who were like, "We must role play now." And the three of us are like, Yes, ma'am. It was great. It was really good. And we would go into, like, the local hobby shops around here, and it would be this gaggle of girls with us, pretty attractive girls, too. And all the dorks behind the counter were like, this is the first time a girl has come in here. Oh, my gosh. They were asking them questions, and they were like, you're a girl.
So what's that like?
And actually, I want to give a little teaser preview of a future podcast.
Ooh. Ooh, I'm so excited about this.
I don't know if this is going to happen or not, because schedules are hard to line up, and it's hard to put these things together. But we actually record these podcasts on Saturdays, and then I finish up the audio and put them out there on Monday. And we're looking at the show we're going to record on Saturday, July 8th, which will be the one put up on the web on Monday, July 10th.
2 days before my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday on this. Because
the big 3-0, Grandpa.
That's right.
We are going to step out of the room, and the mics are going to be taken over by my wife, Chad's wife, Adam's wife, and Tim's wife. And they are going to talk first about what it's like to be married to us.
Oh, saints. All of them
all
saints.
Of them. And secondly, they're also going to talk about a girl's perspective on all these subjects we cover. I have no idea what they're going to talk about. I'm not going to script it. I will bleep their profanities, but that's all the... That's
yeah,
all.
There's going to be a lot of bleeping.
Melina and Dawn's profanities. They're cussers.
But that's all the editing we intend to do. So... Tune in on that one, because it's going to be a surprise for all of
really
us.
I am really excited about this.
Yeah. And, you know, all these girls come from different gaming perspectives, too, because, like, my wife and your wife, Adam, are gamers. Yeah. They game. They enjoy gaming. Tim's wife and Dan's wife have game, but they're the girlfriend games. It's like, come on, honey, you'd like it. And they're not really...
Yeah, you drag them in, they sit around for one campaign, and then they get bored. And, yeah, it was very...
Start knitting.
No, the knitting, yes.
Well, Teresa did do needlepoint.
Yes.
While we were playing Star Trek, she was...
Katie knitted.
Katie knitted, yeah. She hated combat, despised it with a burning passion, and whenever we went into combat, she just had other people roll for her, and she took out this...
It was a
thing.
Quilt.
A quilt, yeah.
Yeah,
a quilt
she has it hanging in her
well,
living room
that's
now.
Not too bad. One of the guys we role play with crochets.
Yeah, he crochets.
Yeah. Mike. He does good crochet, too. Yeah. He still owes me an Afghan for my wedding. So... Mike, if you're listening to this podcast, finish my Afghan.
Yeah.
Rolling into the advice portion for today. By the way, if you haven't been looking, if you go to feartheboot.com, we have a resources link. And under that resources link, we've been putting supporting documents for all the topics we've talked about. So when we talked about the group template, we put up a group template. We put up questions for developing a group template, all sorts of stuff like that. And for the NPC one today, we'll be putting up some sample NPCs for you guys to look at. So let's talk about NPC design. The first point that I have here is that when you're developing an NPC, keep in mind that ultimately these are characters just like player characters. Obviously, they're not run by a player, but these are still fundamentally the same thing, a character in the world. And a lot of the ideas we gave you for constructing a good character will carry over to your non-player characters, because these people, just like your player characters, they need a personality. They need a background that contexts them in the world. They need weaknesses that make them believable. So if you go back to the show where we talked about character creation, which I believe was episode
two
or three. I don't know.
I'm so old now.
I
forget these things.
And our senility. I mean, I don't even know what I had for lunch. So.
Yeah, I think. No, it wasn't two. I don't know.
Oh, well, see, you're getting old too there, youngin. You used to make fun of me for it. I hit you.
Character creation would have been episode three, because two was the group template. Three is character creation. Four was campaign design.
Yeah.
So, and I want to explain, we are tying NPCs as the step after campaign design, because you need these NPCs before you're going to start constructing the individual plots. In the campaign design step, you got a sense of where this game is headed, what it's about. You now know what needs to be in there, that you need a shopkeeper. You need a character for this player's father.
There's no point in making a museum curator if then you later on decide in your plot that you're never going to go to a museum.
Right. So with your campaign design down, this is a good time to make these NPCs. And when you're writing these NPCs up, for most of your NPCs, you don't need anything more than a couple lines of background, a couple lines of personality, a couple lines on their appearance. You don't need any more than at most, I mean, 6-8 sentences on any of them.
And this is really just notes to keep them straight in your head. You know, they go into the shopkeeper, and the shopkeeper's old and senile and a little crazy. And then they go talk to the museum curator, and he's young and hyper and this and that. Well, and then they come back 3 weeks later to the museum curator, and now he's old and senile, and because you forgot. And
no, like that's never happened in any of your games.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And that's something we should probably talk about real quick, is why do this? Why have these NPCs drawn up? And I can come up with two reasons. Reason one is, like you mentioned, consistency.
Right.
Your players do remember the things you don't. Mm-hmm. And if the museum...
Oh, boy, do they.
If your museum curator
everything.
Is Crazy Jed... And they come back.
Crazy wild-eyed Jed.
And they come PhD in archaeology.
And they come back the next time, and he's a well-groomed gentleman. They remember that.
What happened to the crazy eyes?
With a bachelor in IT.
Secondly, is it helps create depth and color. Because what you'll find is if you make NPCs that are colorful, they add a lot to the game. And I've had my players tell me that they get a real kick out of just talking to my NPCs, not because they have some huge involvement in the plot necessarily, but just because they're colorful and fun people to interact with.
I really get my players to rally around my NPCs sometimes.
Oh, there you've created NPCs that I have hated with a burning passion. Yeah.
Like the game is over, we're walking out the door, and you're angry.
God, I hate Viper.
No. That's because somebody stole my NPC.
That's right.
Well, he was a new NPC at that point, I hated him.
Yeah,
and Jacques and a couple others. Yeah. Because
you deconstructed him, and I'm going to have to...
Well,
go back and fix that.
Well, if we're planning on doing another Battletech game, I don't care what you do with it. Just as long as we're playing.
All right. If you're making, by the way, I said do about 6 to 8 sentences. If you are making a major non-player character, a retainer that's in the party, the main bad guy, I would recommend treating them much the same way, as down to the I and T, as an actual player character. Give them the same degree of background, the same degree of personality. They probably need more than 6 to 8 sentences because they play such a consistent, irregular role in your plot.
Well, as a time saver, what I usually do is like you said, a retainer or a servant or something like that. And I don't mean the 1d6 servants that a 20th level D&D player gets, but I mean like, you know, say you have one of the characters is rich and he has a butler. You know, have the player roll that character up and allow him to play him. And I don't mean as like you have two characters now.
Yeah, you're fighting twice in combat.
Yeah, what I mean is that I take over the player, the NPC,
right,
and I walk him around and do stuff with him, and then the player will jump into him and walk him around and do stuff.
Yeah,
and
you can cut out a lot of micromanaging.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit, that's kind of on topic, kind of off, because at this point, we're not talking necessarily about secondary player characters, things like true retainers, yeah. but those purely that are under the control of the game master. But I think you've got a point that if you as a game master find you have too many characters to run at once, that yeah. if you've got a party that has three or four retainers in it and you've got NPCs in the town and NPCs everywhere, that if you trust your players,
yeah.
don't be afraid to unload some of these NPCs on them.
We have had
bullet shields. NPC bullet shields. I have all of my retainers stand in front of me.
Well,
they get shot.
That aside, it's when you trust your players yeah, not to do
exactly,
things like
yeah. that. That's when you don't trust your players yeah. because they're not playing them believably.
But we've had some great games where, you know, it always happens. Some players have to go off and do this, and some players have to go off and do that.
And then they keep the party together.
Yeah, you can't have all, you have people sitting around bored while you're dealing with another player. Well, throw some NPCs in there and let the people who are sitting around bored play those NPCs. I pull the players aside and I say, okay, this guy's like this, this guy's like this, this is what their motivation is. You know, like they're trying to get information out, or they're trying to be a heavy, or they're trying to protect the village or whatever. And play those guys so that you're not sitting around being bored. But again, it all gets back to, it's not a competition between the game master and the players. It's you guys are coming together to do this thing together. You have to have an open dialogue. You have to trust your players. Players have to trust you.
Right. I want to give a couple.
That's a little bit of a tangent.
Yeah, it was going.
I don't know where it was going, but I was letting you go there.
Okay, so coming back from that tangent, good information, but kind of a tangent.
Yeah.
Sorry
about that.
Getting back to game master run NPCs, not player run NPCs.
Right.
As I said, with major NPCs, mm-hmm. make them the same way you would a character. Now, I've got a couple tips here.
Well, and let me ask you this to clarify. When you say make them like you'd make a character, are you talking about taking a sheet, rolling dice, writing down stats, going through the entire character creation process for every NPC, or just put as much thought
well,
into them?
Well, and this is purely a matter of personal taste, but what I would recommend is with a major NPC, once again, a retainer in the party, the ultimate villain, a character who plays a significant and recurring role in your mm-hmm. in your game, it is my recommendation you create them entirely as players. You roll them up as if they were a player. You give them a significant lengthy background and personality.
Ooh, paperwork.
As if they were a player. But with your minor NPCs, people right. that either don't play a recurring role or do play a recurring role, but they're not major. Like, for example, the pub keeper that you keep going back to. You know, he's a minor NPC. Yeah. He's there all the time. He needs to be colorful. He needs to be memorable.
That's when you make just flavor notes.
Right. But you've got to remember, and I've got some kind of tips here for making a good minor NPC. And one of the things I want to remind you guys is that we're big believers in depth and detail, but in a minor NPC, that's not going to come out.
Yeah.
If he's the sort of person that's really quiet on the outside and has this war in his mind, that's a great player. That's a great major NPC.
He's just quiet.
Yeah, it's a terrible barkeeper because that never comes out. You've got to have something that's very colorful immediately.
Yeah. So, well, and it gets back again, hooks. It's all about the hooks.
And what has always worked for me is I take a social cliche or stereotype. I know this is a big nasty word now because of politically correctness, but take a social cliche, the crazy old woman, the hyperactive kid, downtrodden old dock worker.
Yeah.
And use that as a good basis for your NPC. Why? Well, first of all, because, as I said, it's instantly colorful. There's immediately something that's unusual about this character. And secondly, because it's very memorable to your players. They're going to walk away remembering what that person was like because it's something they can not only see quickly, but something they can mentally categorize and relate to very quickly.
Yeah, I think too, this can add a little more realism to your game. Like, these stereotypes just don't spring out of nowhere. They're there for a reason because these people exist.
Right, and these stereotypes are also easy to make because there's something that you can quickly come up with that's still unique.
Right.
Whereas if you try to come up with your characters in great detail from the ground up, they're going to start sounding the same.
That's a lot of work, too.
It's also a lot of work. And
speaking of 60 hours of prep time on the game, last 2 weeks.
Well, and speaking of a lot of work, I would also recommend for their stat sheets, just in case that becomes necessary, when you're writing these NPCs up, if the game you're playing has archetypes in there, just note that this guy belongs to this archetype, because it's real easy that, okay,
just
somebody
a photocopy of the archetype.
Right, yes. Yeah. Somebody asked him something obscure. You got to roll to see if he knows it. You can flip to the archetype real quick. You don't want to create a character sheet for all 5,000 people in the village they live in.
That really helps, too, for, like, enemies, that enemy NPCs that the players fight. I remember in our first D&D games, you guys fought so many skeletons, but there wasn't a single skeleton in the game. I just liked the stats. They're balanced.
Right. Now, I've got a couple don'ts to throw in for your NPCs as well. Some things that, if you do these on minor or major NPCs, this is for both of them, that makes the NPCs problematic. First of all, don't make them overbearing in stats such that they eclipse the players.
Right.
If you have a party of, let's use D&D because it's easy to gauge power. You have a party of four players, they're all level 5, and you throw in that level 20 wizard who's following them around.
Harassing them.
They can't do anything.
Slaughtering them.
Well, and you know, there, so many games I've seen that I've been in this and I've watched them at conventions and stuff where, you know, the evil wizard appears in front of them and starts laughing and pointing and making their life miserable and mocking the players, and the players can't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the players, they can't talk back because the guy will kill them. They can't try and kill them to stop them. They can't walk away because the wizard just teleports them back, right. And it's like it's not a person, that's a plot device,
right? And it can, you know, if your players are okay with that and it helps your plots, go ahead and use them. But sometimes with those plot devices, they can just annoy your players, because you play a role-playing game because you want to be hands-on and involved. And if you have a friendly or hostile NPC who is so significantly much more powerful than you are, who is putting themselves in your path, not just in the background, because, there's more powerful people in your players in the world. Mm-hmm. But if these guys are obstructing or pushing the plot, then your players just become frustrated because suddenly the game they played purely for involvement, they can't be involved in.
Well, and there's an opposite side of that, too, with, like, NPCs who are friendly to the characters, who, we'll use a D&D example, you know, there's a castle, and it's filled with all these super powerful werewolves or whatever, and your character's only level 5, and they have an NPC in the group who's level 30.
Right.
And the NPC walks them through the
castle.
You're just
following through the carnage.
I've been in games like that before. It's like the plot and story and character development goes down to zip, and then it's just watching the game master roll dice.
Right. Now, just as you don't want the characters to be overbearing in stats, you also don't want the NPCs to be overbearing in action, especially those that are friendly to the party. Now, here's what exactly we mean by that. Let's say that you're in a situation where things are pretty well balanced. You've got your party of four players, they're all level 5. The NPC who's with them is also level 5, is not, you know, eclipsing them in that regard. But all of a sudden the game focuses on knowledge of this one ancient language and ancient culture, which he just happens to be an inside-out expert in, and he answers every question, solves every riddle,
machina.
Yeah, god by machine. Don't do that either, because once again, your players, this is supposed to be their game, their challenge.
Right.
And if you have a NPC who just dominates the action, pulls all the levers, knows all the answers, solves all the puzzles, your players aren't involved anymore.
Or give that guy and then kill him.
Yeah.
It's not to say you shouldn't have your NPCs help them. When I'm running a game, if I have an NPC in the party and they're stuck on something,
I try and make them a resource.
I may use the NPC to unstick them, to nudge them in the right direction, to give them a tip. And also the NPC, just like the players, he has areas he or she is an expert.
Mm-hmm.
But don't let that become the dominating force of your game, where your characters are just supposed to wander around following this guy in awe of his brilliance. And
those games are miserable.
Yeah, they are. And we've seen them, we've played in them, we've heard about them.
We've ran them.
The third tip I have, and this is going to sound so common sense, but really think about this, don't make them annoying.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Again, that's another hook.
Because, well,
I make some pretty annoying characters.
But, okay, hear me what I mean by that. The world's a colorful place.
Yeah.
And if your game is reflecting real life to some degree, it's going to be a colorful place. And there's going to be irritating people. There's going to be jerks. There's going to be morons. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not saying don't make these people abrasive or offensive or difficult to deal with. What I'm saying is don't make them a consistent irritant. That if you have an NPC who is with the players from start to finish, and they're just an obstructionist, chittering jackass.
Do you see me giving you the eye, Chad?
I do. And
this guy appears in every one of our games.
See, not in every one.
Yeah, see, and this is exactly the problem that we're seeing here, is the game master may get a kick out of it, but you're making your players miserable.
Well, it's not...
No, they're...
I think it can be done well, to the point where this character motivates.
Well, if that's the case, then he's no longer just a generically annoying character. He now has...
Oh, no, you just wait.
Yeah.
It's coming. I've already seen which character it is.
It isn't just... It isn't a matter of one character, but, I mean, it's a matter of... I like to make characters... I like to blur lines between good and evil, right and wrong in games. And I like to face the characters with choices that are really ambiguous. And I like to face them with characters, NPCs, who are jerks or evil or bad people, but who are on their side, working towards their same goal.
That you just can't straight kill.
Yeah, you can't kill them. You can't just say, well, I'm going to ignore you. They're
because
too
you can't
important.
Kill all of your problems.
Yeah.
Sometimes
and
you have to find other ways around
I
them.
Like making the characters deal with that emotionally. And sometimes it works really well, and sometimes they're just like, I cannot deal with this
right.
guy anymore.
But hear this for the shade of gray, that I'm not saying you should make all your characters
oh, no, no,
fun,
no, no,
easy,
not but, all of them, no.
Well, no, no, but I'm also saying you shouldn't do the other side. Don't make all the NPCs fun, easy to get along with.
Right,
make some
right.
that are annoying. But if it's getting to the point that your players, the people who are playing the game, are just getting frustrated and bothered, lay off it, because you are degrading the game. You know, the point is to have fun. You're destroying their
You definitely
fun.
Have to. It's a definite balance act. You have to gauge your players. And it's like, it's one thing to get hooks and to push buttons, but when...
It's another thing to piss off characters.
Character anger transfers to player anger.
Right, it's gone too far.
You need to pull it back.
All right, one last topic on NPCs before we wrap this one up.
I'm reading the paper, and I already like where this is going.
We have a paper out. In addition to the big board, we have paper outlines we read off of. Don't follow them word for word, but just kind of tells us the bullet points.
Yeah,
we
it gives us
hit.
A sort of direction to avoid major tangents like the one we had 10 minutes ago.
Right. So,
like how I've read this before, and I've just now noticed that this is the last topic. So,
the last topic is the death of your NPCs. And
I cry.
I've been in games where you have major NPCs. Maybe, let's say it's a recurring bad guy who pops up, laughs at you, disappears, which Chad was just talking about. It's probably not a good idea. But let's say it happens. And when it happens, somebody in the party yanks out a gun, pulls the trigger, rolls the dice, kills the guy.
Natural 20.
Yeah. First, couple things on that. And this is my taste, my flavor. Some people disagree with me on this because they think NPCs are too important as plot devices to let go easily. Ugh. But my take on it as a GM is if you're allowing the players to be involved in the world, their actions have to be meaningful. You can't just take away actions because you don't like how it changed the world. So if I have a major bad guy, and in his first appearance, somebody yanks a gun and clocks his head, he's dead. And my recommendation to you as game masters, it may be hard to accept that because these guys are your babies, these guys are your plot devices, but once again, if the player's actions in the world are not meaningful, then your players may begin to question why they're there at all. Let it happen. But you can deal with this. If, for example, they clock the head of your major bad guy in the first sitting of the game and he's supposed to be there for 20 more games, that's not to say he doesn't have a second in command who can't take over, rise to the ranks, or somebody else jumps in and fills that vacuum.
And all the plot that you've written for this guy, they haven't uncovered yet. So then they're not going to know if you just shovel it on over to this second guy.
Or if something happens where in a fight, a random thug kills one of the friends of the party. It's not to say you can't have someone else pop in and take that place. A friend of that guy say, well, you know, they killed him, so in honor of his memory, you know, I'm going to take this over. Let that happen. Let these actions have a meaningful and lasting effect in the game. What do you guys think about that? You agree with me?
I think that if a player wants to whip out a gun and kill an NPC, he better have a good reason, just as much as he better have a good reason to do anything.
Yeah, well, you don't want it to be really unrealistic.
Right.
This guy comes up, I don't like the way he looks, I want to kill him.
Yeah.
All right, that's not a reason to do anything.
Yeah, well, that's out of character.
Well, I think there you've got a player problem, not a character. Because, you can't say, well, I'm going to kill this guy. Okay, make a save against your reason.
I think that when you have an NPC, and as a game master, you are not willing to have that NPC leave or enter the plot. You know, like, put him in harm's way, or have the players do something plot-wise to marginalize the NPC.
Well, there has to be consistent realism.
Yeah.
If you are playing a game where your players can die, you have to concede that your NPCs can die.
Right, exactly.
And this is going to vary from group to group, because I know some groups prefer games that are more storyteller-oriented than what we run, but I've always been a firm believer that a game is about the characters. Mm-hmm. There may be a plot, there may be lots of things going on, but this is a story of the characters. This is not a story of the NPCs.
Right.
And so the NPCs, you have to let them go. You can't make them so fixed in the game and so immovable that really their presence is more permanent, more important, and more dominating than that of the characters. Because otherwise, why are your players playing?
Well, and also, too, with my NPCs, and I am not always able to pull this off. Like I said, I like to try to challenge players with alternative ideas where the bad guys are not necessarily evil. They are just counter to what the players are doing.
Right.
And I don't like putting up the bad guy, the antagonist. I like,
you know,
the group
actually,
to be...
That's probably worth hitting on real quick, actually bringing this in as an unplanned topic.
Oh, no!
No, it's all the church! I'm writing it in.
The outline's on fire!
Okay.
I need my script!
But,
line.
But if you... We talked about a couple times now, making your NPCs a lot like you do a PC, with personality, background, and depth. And I think you're right that the more deep your NPCs are, the more interesting they are.
Yeah.
And especially your major NPCs come back often enough, you don't need to hide behind social cliches. Mm. They can be complex personalities with hidden motives, with all these internal conflicts even going on in them. And I think you're right that the more depth and realism you put into them, it can add something to the game.
Right.
I guess it depends on the type of game you're playing, because maybe the Black Knight in the demonic armor who lives in the tower on the hill. I mean, maybe for your game, that really does fit the setting. And
maybe your players want to go out and slay a dragon.
Right. But for our games, we try to run even bad guys whose views are very, very complicated. I don't want to get caught up in a gaming story, but I can think of the campaign I ran recently where the guy I had pegged as the main bad guy for the whole game, the players reasoned with him.
Yeah.
And actually, in all realism, they talked him out of what he was doing. So he kind of switched sides, and I had to raise up something else.
Some other conflict to resolve.
But you know what? It worked out wonderfully.
That's awesome.
It worked out wonderfully. It was one of the best campaigns we've ever played, and because I didn't see that coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love game mastering, is I love creating the sandbox and seeing what my players will do with it. And if you are forcing your players down a pipe of actions, you as a game master, you're robbing yourself of that chance, because you will never know what they were going to do with it, because you won't let them do it.
Right.
So let them have some freedom in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's enough about NPCs. Actually, looking at our time, these shows, we originally thought they were going to be about 20 minutes. And
where are we at right now?
We're approaching 48 minutes.
Wow.
Whoa,
longest minutes.
Chop it off now.
So,
jeez.
Yeah, when we sat down and planned this podcast, like before we recorded the first one, we thought our shows would run about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And they've just been progressively getting longer.
The last, somebody made the comment during the last podcast is that 45 minutes was our iron ceiling.
Yeah,
and
we just cruised right over.
You know what? We're even light two hosts.
Well, and also I dropped topics. We had topics discussed today. I've just dropped for next time. You guys write us in. Let us know what you think. Do you want the shows?
Yeah, Jim from Buffalo. It seems that everybody else in this podcast has gotten an email from you except for me. You know, I already cry myself to sleep every night. You're really not helping. I mean, maybe an email from you would take the gun out of my mouth.
Now, if that's not pressure, I don't know what is. So, if you guys like the length of the shows, think they should be longer, shorter, whatever, feartheboot.com, let us know. And while you guys are putting your emails together, we'll be working on episode 6. So we will catch you then.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.